Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Hello and welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. Glad you're with us as always. Glad you found us wherever it may be. iTunes, Audio Boom, GolfTripX.com. He is Darren Bunch out there in California. You can find him at Golf Getaways. On Twitter and Instagram, me, Mitch Lawrence, at Mitch Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A-N-C-E, on those same social medias. Darren, great to talk to you today, as always. Always have fun, man. I miss you. You're too far away, 3,000 miles apart. We haven't traveled. We haven't seen each other and played. It sucks. How's that?
Yes. Yes, it definitely does. But, you know, we've gotten out and played a little bit of golf, just not together. And
true.
I've done a few trips on my own, and we're going to talk today about a trip that you took on your own, all by your lonesome, mm-hmm. down to Atlanta. I'm looking forward to hearing about it. And it sounds like a place that I'm going to want to go next time I can get out there post-pandemic, as they say, or post-vaccine, as I guess we say now.
Yeah, it was an amazing couple of days that I had at the Bobby Jones Golf Course in Atlanta. And I, as you'll hear, as I go through the amazing place that this is and all the different aspects of why I think it's probably, as far as I was concerned, as I was playing and spending some time there, and then the drive home, and then in the time that I've had since I've been there, I wasn't only blown away while I was there, but I get more blown away every time I think about it and have done some research and looked into what went into building it and all the other things. So I'm looking forward to talking about it. I think people who haven't been aware of it, hopefully now that they will be by listening to this and other things on social media, they'll have a chance to get there. Because in all the traveling I've done, and you and I have both experienced some incredible places and alternate kind of golf experiences, I don't think there's any place that I've been ever that combines the history of the game with a forward-looking future in the game the way that Bobby Jones Golf Course does. And it's a big statement, but the more I thought about it, the more I realized that's really the way I felt. I'm going to start off. I want to thank a couple of people. Chris Mascaro, our good friend from Next on the Tee, who lives in Atlanta, has been talking about the Bobby Jones Golf Course. I had seen a little about it, but Chris was really the one who started getting me interested in actually making this trip. I had thought I'd be able to experience it with him. That didn't pan out, but I decided to go by myself. So thanks to Chris. And also to Angela Winther of Pineapple Public Relations. You and I deal with a lot of PR people in our travels and our trips. All of them are usually wonderful, but Angela was really incredible in terms of not only setting up the time there, but giving me information and connecting me with people. So I wanted to give Angela a shout out at the beginning of this. Without her, this wouldn't have been nearly as easy to accomplish.
I think it's important that we say that probably more as we go forward in the podcast too, that there are people out there. We couldn't do this without them. And there are so many great people in the golf industry that we've encountered over the years. And to me, you know, that's one of the things of the pandemic is not being able to, you know, see those people as much, work with them as much. And so, you know, it's one of those things that I just think one of the many things we missed during the pandemic.
Yeah, I totally agree. And she really was great, quick with response and information and just always willing to go the extra little bit to help us, to help me get out of Bobby Jones Golf Course what I did.
I have a question to start this thing off. You yep. went and took a golf trip, but you did something that most of us don't do to kick off our golf trips. You went to a cemetery.
Correct. And again, there are great golf courses that somehow involve a small little cemetery.
Yes.
It happens in Scotland. There's a course down here in Myrtle Beach, Heritage, which has a little cemetery area under a tree. There might be 5-10 little gravestones.
Pacific Grove out here in on the Monterey Peninsula plays around a cemetery. It's definitely an interesting way to play golf.
Well, and one of the great things about the game is it's old enough where if you can get to a golf course that has some history, there's a chance you're going to kind of go past it. But I had no idea what I was in for. One day I was when I had put up that I was going to Bobby Jones, somebody had said something about, I hope you stop by. And I think it was Rick Young up in Canada, good friend and wonderful golf guy. And it might have been Rick who said, when I was in Atlanta, I didn't do it, and I hope you do. And so I decided just to kind of look and see where it was and said, okay, on my way in, it happened to be on the way in from Myrtle Beach, I'm going to stop by there. And then I thought, what a great way to start this trip, to go to Bobby Jones' gravesite as I'm about to hit Bobby Jones' golf course. And when you go to Oakland Cemetery, when I say you have no idea what you're getting into, I grew up in New York, and there's a cemetery on the way into the city from Long Island that is huge. I mean, huge. And you drive right by it. I used to see it all the time and think, what? How could this even be here? And when you go to Oakland Cemetery, you come in and you drive by the walls of it, and it's just a drive. You realize how big a place you're about to go into. But once you walk in, Darren, there are 70,000 sites at Oakland Cemetery. 70,000. And it is huge, doesn't cover it. And every kind of gravesite you can imagine, from huge, opulent, big family sites to the smallest of gravestones with just a name and a date. And Oakland is amazing. And I did, you know, just kind of walked around a little bit on the way to Bobby Jones' site. And you can't believe everybody from just regular families in Atlanta who happen to want to be buried at Oakland to, as I said, some of the biggest names in the city's history are there. In addition to Bobby Jones, people like Margaret Mitchell, who wrote Gone with the Wind, anybody in Atlanta who was really of fame and wasn't at another cemetery is at Oakland. I couldn't begin to spend any time walking around, which I really wanted to do. You could spend days just walking around and looking. Very interesting spot. But what I did, I just kind of asked, a woman was walking, and I said, could you help me? I don't have time. I want to find Bobby Jones' gravesite. And she said, oh yeah, it's down there. You make a right, and then you make a left, and it's right there. And I said, you seem to know a lot about this place. And she said, I'm a history professor at Georgia State. And I spend a lot of time here. But it's really fascinating. So I walk and I walk and I turn, and there is Bobby Jones. And I had seen pictures of it. It's a fascinating spot with a really kind of simple gravestone that says Bobby Jones, Mary Jones. There's probably 50, 75, 100 golf balls that have been laid at the site, at the bottom of the headstone, and on top of the headstone, little trinkets of things that people place there. So I stood there for, I don't know, probably 10 minutes. I looked around and just kind of communed with Bobby Jones for a little bit. And it was a really great way to start this trip. I can't tell you how cool it was to just stand there, look at the name, think about what he meant to the game, to Atlanta, to the Masters, to Augusta. It all starts kind of flooding in. And it was a perfect way to start the trip. I really wish I could have spent time, and hopefully if I go back, and I will, I'll just walk around for a while because it's fascinating. So that was a great start. And then I just drove over. I had a tee time about an hour after I got to Bobby Jones' golf course, and I'd read a little bit about it before I went, obviously. But once you drive in, and you kind of just park, they have a parking garage, and you park in the parking garage and walk down, and the experience of it starts to kind of hit you. And I'm going to start in kind of a weird way. I'm going to start with the conclusion I came to afterwards, because this is what really struck me. I'll get into individually the different elements of Bobby Jones and why it's special. But I've been thinking a lot about it after I came home, and the start at the cemetery really is what ties this all together. This is not, Bobby Jones Golf Course is not just a golf course. It is the best marriage of golf history and the future of the metropolitan game that you can possibly have. And I really think it's the only place that we can have this in America. And there's a great reason for it. I tried to think of somebody or someplace else that I work with, and I can't. And it's because of Bobby Jones and what he meant to the game, to the growth of the game in America, and to his objective. He was really well known in Atlanta and in the golf world of reaching out, not just to amateurs, but to beginning golfers, to kids, to people who are learning the game. He was a spreader of the game. And Bobby Jones Golf Course, totally unique. The whole experience takes the game's past. The people in Atlanta, the influential figures in the game of golf who came from Atlanta, and combines it with this amazing, forward-looking, community-friendly plan that was put together by an incredible group of people. And it's already, in a couple of short years, providing amazing, huge dividends on every front. And that's the deep conviction I have about this place after being there and thinking about it. And we'll just, you and I'll just get into kind of talking about what it is about it that makes it so special.
Well, tell me a little bit about what, I mean, where this all started. I mean, this was the first public golf course in Atlanta, right?
Yes.
But now 30 something million dollars later, you know, it's not just a little old golf course that it was. It's all the things that you're talking about now that are hopefully going to lead us into the next, century of golf.
Yeah. Well, the great thing was I'll get to him in a little while, but I got to spend an hour with Brian Conley, who's the director of golf, the head PGA pro. And he kind of explained a bunch of this to me, but as far as the golf course itself, it was opened in 1933. As you said, it was the first public course in Atlanta. And you have to remember the time. You have to go back to the time. Bobby Jones had won the Grand Slam in 1930. He was a hero, not just in Atlanta, but around the country. People who knew the game, there were ticker tape parades, everything that went on. People were coming out of the Great Depression. They wanted some recreation. Atlanta was growing as a city. And golf was kind of starting a little bit to explode after the Grand Slam. More people had heard about it. So the course itself opened in 1933, and it was 18 holes. From what I can gather, it was about 5,800 yards at the beginning. It got up to, over the years, about 6,400 yards, a par 70, but it was squeezed onto 120 acres. It was originally on the site, the city of Atlanta, the Peachtree Creek Memorial Park, it was called. And over the years, as time went on, the course just was neglected. It was owned by the city. It was not well maintained. The rumor had it that Bobby Jones kind of was a little disappointed because it wasn't kept up, but he was too much of a humble guy to kind of go in and say, this isn't working. So it just kind of kept going along those lines over the years. And as the city grew and as the game grew, it was pretty obvious that it was neglected to the point, recently, before the renovation and all this work started, really came down to one guy, from what I can tell, and really interesting, a guy named Marty Elgeson, who was the attorney for the trademark of the Bobby Jones name, the heirs, the Bobby Jones legacy, lived about a mile away from the golf course. And he would drive by it every day, and he kind of saw this course in disrepair. And he said the course cost about $25 to play, and he wouldn't pay it because that's how bad the golf course was. That's the kind of shape it was in. And finally, one day, driving by, from what I can gather, he just decided enough is enough, and he couldn't stand that the legacy of Bobby Jones' name, because it was called Bobby Jones Golf Course.
Right.
It had always been called that. And it got so under his skin that he said, I'm going to try to do something about it. So this is a long and involved story, which I won't get into. But if people are interested, it's a fascinating read to go through what they did. But anyway, Marty Elgeson started thinking about what they can do. And he shared an idea to renovate the golf course with Bob Jones IV. And anybody who follows Bob Jones the Fourth on social media, and you should if you don't. He is an unbelievable guy. He's Bobby Jones' grandson. He regularly speaks about Bobby Jones, about the name, the family, the history. He is a fascinating and wonderful guy. So Marty went and talked to Bob Jones the Fourth, had an idea about renovating it, and Bob apparently was skeptical because of the bureaucracy involved. Remember, it was owned by the city. There were neighborhoods that grew up around it that were, you know, pretty nice neighborhoods, and they couldn't quite figure out what to do. Bob Cupp, the architect, and I'll get into him in a little bit, who lived in Atlanta at the time, Bob Jones had already started to work pro bono on a plan, from what I can tell, to renovate the golf course. Then another attorney, Chuck Palmer, got involved, and this spread of the friends of Bobby Jones and the golf course is, to me, truly mind-boggling. Chuck Palmer got involved, Marty, and a group of investors and friends created the Bobby Jones Golf Course Foundation. And long story short, there was a land swap that they did between the state of Georgia and the city, and the state wound up taking it over from the city. There were partnerships formed back and forth. This took a while. It was decided that instead of a renovation to the 18 holes, which was the original thought, we'll just redo the bunkers and the greens. But they realized this had become a dangerous golf course. That's the word they used. It was squeezed so much. And Darren, imagine when the course started, the type of player that was playing the equipment, and now you're dealing with, you know, in the middle 2010s and before, you're dealing with players that are bombing it and you've got 18 holes squeezed in, and it was literally dangerous. People were in danger of getting hit by golf shots all over the place. So they decided that they were going to take Bob Cupp's idea. He had been working on a reversible 9 holes, and they were going to take that idea. They were going to spread the course so that it would be usable and friendly and people could really play on it. And that's what they did. So sad, it was an amazing partnership. And I'm telling you that when you look at it, I won't go into all of them, but the plans that they had to put this together and raise the $30 million plus dollars through Atlanta-based companies and people to raise the money is staggering. And again, as I said, it's a way that the city and metropolitan areas have to come together to make these kinds of plans work. They sold, these are just one, every hole was sold at the beginning to a sponsor for $150,000 naming rights for 50 years. They gave those to the naming rights. The Arthur Blank Foundation got involved. Arthur Blank, the famous Atlanta guy owns the Atlanta
Falcons.
Owner
of the Atlanta Falcons, right.
Right, but he's a major philanthropist. He got involved. The PGA Tour Superstore, which is based in Atlanta, donated, all kinds of equipment and stuff. Club Car donated carts for the first 4 years. Coca-Cola, all the great Atlanta companies came together to raise this amount of money. And to do this, they not only decided they were going to renovate the golf course, they said, we are going to make this the epicenter of golf in Georgia. And that's what it kind of came down to, and that's what they've done. That is what they've accomplished. The course opened in November of 2018, really sadly. And Bob Cupp is a guy who I'm familiar with, and a lot of people aren't, as an architect, sadly. But he had done this reversible 9 routing. And it was, in his head, it was in his heart. He did it all pro bono to give back to the city of Atlanta and to Bobby Jones. And he sadly passed away in 2016 before they broke ground. His son, Bobby, who he'd been working with again since 2013, Bobby Cupp, had gone out on his own. He's a great architect and has done a ton of wonderful courses on his own. But he came back in 2013 to get back involved with his dad, and he wound up completing the project after Bob Cupp passed away. So there's a lot of family history on that side.
Before we get more into Bob, I want to go back to this idea, because as a guy who is working on multiple golf projects that require funding, I am fascinated by this idea that they sold these hole-by-hole sponsorships for $150,000 for 50 years. That, it's just, it blows my mind that somebody came up with that idea, and that all these people, certainly Atlanta, you have to do it in a big metropolitan city like that, where you have the kind of people that you mentioned. But I just think as a way to fund a renovation, it's just overhaul. It's just an amazing way to think about it and get the community involved in making something like this happen.
Yeah. And that's, like I said, I think Atlanta and the Bobby Jones Golf Course and the foundation it's a really unique situation, because it starts and ends with Bobby Jones and what he stood for. And I think you can certainly do it in other cities, and there are going to be people who get creative and are able to do it. But in terms of weaving the fabric of a golf course into a city, it's what they've been able to do. And obviously, small donorships, you know, there's other ways for people who don't have a lot of money to get involved. But when you're talking about the kind of, you have to see the whole place to believe what they've done. When you're talking about that kind of project, and you're coming to it from where they came from, a city-owned site. We all have seen municipal golf courses that have gone, you know, really been mismanaged and underserved.
Sure.
So to go from that to what they were talking about, and these companies and people who are passionate about the city that they're in and the game, they really saw this. I mean, Arthur Blank, who's been working with the West Side of Atlanta to rebuild communities, they wound up saying, okay, we're also going to hire people from these communities to work at Bobby Jones Golf Course in North Atlanta.
Nice.
You know, they're the fabric and the weaving together of all these people and the ideas, it's part of a big part of what really blew me away about this whole thing.
Yep.
And it's so evident in a couple of years what they've done that really has worked. And there's more. I mean, they're coming with other stuff, but that's a different story. Let's get to Bob Cupp, because I think one of the great things about this, I've had a chance to play Tom Doak's loop up at Forest Dunes, a reversible 18-hole golf course, which I loved and I really thought was brilliant when I played it. When I heard this was a reversible 9, and what, according to Brian Conley, again, the director of golf, he was telling me, I asked him about that. I said I played the loop, and he said, well, you know, from what he can gather, Bob Cupp had the reversible idea 9. He never got to see it in action. The way he put it was that Bob Cupp, and I don't know how Tom Doak would feel about this, but, you know, I'm going with it, that Bob Cupp had the reversible 9 idea and Tom Doak had it in the ground first. That's okay. The way he said it. So I said, okay, that's cool with me, because I love Bob Cupp. For people who aren't familiar with him, again, another example of an architect that we had and have had, former president of the American Society of Golf Course Architects, has worked on so many golf courses that you just have to Google him, look him up, and you'll get an idea. But he was a great designer on his own, and did tons of wonderful places, Shoal Creek in Alabama, Desert Highlands in Arizona. Then as a collaborator, Glen Abbey with Nicholas in Canada. He was a senior designer with Nicholas for 15 years. Darren, he did Old Waverly in Mississippi.
Yep.
Wonderful spot, Witch Hollow at Pumpkin Ridge with John Foate, Liberty National with Tom Kite. And what I get out of that part of it, because I knew about Bob Cupp as a solo designer, but when I see all the people that he worked with, and there's a lot more, I realize to be a great collaborator, you have to be a special human, not just talented, but you have to be able to work with people. And to me, it said a lot about who Bob Cupp was. I got to know Bob Cupp originally, and I've told you this story, because he collaborated with Lewis Keller, a great amateur golfer, on Oakhurst Links outside where the Greenbrier is, which is the first place I ever hit a hickory club. And by hand, Bob Cupp and Lewis Keller redid a 9-hole golf course into the 1894 course. It was built by 6 Scottish guys by hand. They rebuilt the greens that were there and the tee boxes and everything else. So I knew who Bob Cupp was. He'll have a special place in my heart forever. But anyway, you'll find this interesting. When I dove a little deeper about Bob Cupp, he had already done some alternate course work. He built 12 replica holes, and you know this place.
Very well.
Angel Park in Las Vegas. He did the 12 replica holes that are lighted, and you can play. I've played it. In 2013, he did the Quick Six, which is a six-hole loop at Plantation at Reynolds Lake Oconee, where we've been.
Yes.
And he's just one of those guys who obviously had been thinking about these kinds of ways of playing golf and bringing it to more people than, you know, than a lot of other designers. I think it's happening now more, luckily for all of us. But Bob Kupp is he's high up on the list. We've got a few modern ones that we love that we won't, we've already gone into on the podcast, and I'm sure we will again. But Bob Kupp is somebody that should be revered in this country as far as I'm concerned.
I think it's amazing that he has his fingerprints on so many different projects. Like when you talk about the collaborative nature of the things he worked on with other people, you know, there are so many of those when we dive into researching a place that we're headed or something, and we'll see Bob's name come up, and it's just sometimes it's mind blowing that the reach that he had throughout the industry.
I agree, and that's and I said we have a lot of them. If you just go to, if you're interested in it, and you Google some of the architects, it's like when we had Bobby Weed on the show, and you kind of look at the stuff Bobby did, and you go, "What?" You know, Bob Kupp is one of those guys. And I just, he was 76 when he died, and I kind of looked at it and went, man, that's sad, because he would, he'd burst with what's going on at Bobby Jones Golf Course. He absolutely would. And let's get to the course. It's the foundation of what is there and what happened once they decided to go after this project. As I said, it's a reversible line. I got there the first day, and you pull in, and you kind of walk down, ride down. They have most of it is walking, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But I had decided, because in terms of technology, Bobby Jones Golf Course and their partners at Club Car, they have great new golf carts that are technologically totally advanced. And they have these tempo walk things that I'll get to that are also great. But I decided for the first nine to take the cart, and then the second nine to take a tempo walk and walk the course. So I jump in a cart. It's got Bluetooth. It's got Wi-Fi all over the golf course, internet capability, all that stuff, which is fine, you know, for people who want that. It's great. What I loved was I got to have the Bluetooth on and music, played alone, had a blast. But anyway, I get in the cart and I drive down. You go behind the Murray Golf House, which I'll get to. You wind down behind that and go down to the flat where the golf course is located. And as I'm driving down, I'm seeing a golf course laid out, and I was already excited about what I was going to see. It's about, just some kind of background on the way they set it up. It's about 100 acres, the course. The entire property itself with everything is about, from what Brian told me, about 118 acres. You drive down, and there's no, and Darren, this to me is one of the great accomplishments of what they did here. There are no tee boxes at all. There's just kind of teeing areas. They use what's called the longleaf tee system, which I had never heard of. But they don't have, there's no gender-based anything. There's levels, and they have eight levels on each teeing area. So it starts in the back with level eight and works its way up to level one. There's a number, either red or white, depending on which way you're playing it, which day. And as it, listen to, this absolutely blew me away. There's the Magnolia Nine and the Azalea Nine. The Magnolia 9 goes at the back from the number 8 tee, 3792, that's the yardage, all the way down to 1685. The Azalea, 3694, down to 1582. So in other words, you, when you play both nines in reverse, a course that goes from 7486 yards to 3267 yards.
That's outstanding.
So the instant statement is, if you're a good player, go get it. And if you're a total beginner, go get it. And everybody in between. And so I looked at that just there, and it gives you all the info you need about what they're doing at Bobby Jones Golf Course, what they're focused on, and how much of an accommodation to every level of golfer there is, age-wise, ability-wise, everything. And I love these tees. There's no, you just pick an area around that number, kind of, and you just peg it and go.
So tell me a little bit about the green designs. You know, obviously, like you mentioned, the Loop earlier, we both played that. I've been to Sylvie's Valley Ranch out here in Oregon. You know, talk about how the greens are played in multiple directions, because that has to be the core of something like this, right?
Yeah, and what I found great about the fact that this is a 9-hole course, when I played the Loop, I was aware of the reverse nature of the Loop at different times while I was playing. But I often found it, I wasn't connected to the entirety of the first loop around one way when I went around the second way. Mm-hmm. Because the property is so big that you can lose sight. When you get up on a green, you might go, oh yeah, right, this is the Biarritz green. But it's harder to distinguish that connection. What this 9-hole course does is, and especially when you play it like I did in the afternoon and the morning, you're fully aware of the fact that you're on a hole going the other way that you just played, you know, in the morning or the afternoon.
And you did that the same day?
No, afternoon, the first nine, and then morning,
and then the
second
morning.
Nine, because it changes daily.
Got it.
And that's, to me, a great way to do it, because it's really fresh in your mind, although afternoon and afternoon obviously works too. The greens are big, and they're double greens. You know, they're basically, they have two flags on the greens, a red and a white, depending on which day you're playing. The first day I played the white flag, second day I played the red flags. And they're spread apart, you know, for the most part, on the greens. So you're just aware of which flag you're hitting to. And then you play to that. And there's when you think about the challenge of what Bob Cupp had to do in the design, because you're getting beginner golfers up to really good players, you have to be able to have them be simple enough greens where it's not crazy for beginning or, you know, players that are just really getting into the game, but challenging enough for good players where they're not flat and just get in. And he managed to accomplish that. Are they the toughest greens a plus one handicap is going to putt? No. Are they the hardest greens that those guys are going to play, or the easiest greens a beginner is going to play? No. But they managed to get the feel for both levels and everything in between. They're subtle. They're nuanced. Some of them have swales. You have to be careful. If you hit it on the wrong side of the pin, it's not an easy two-putt. It's not a given two-putt. And they really accomplished that. So no matter which direction you're going, I never felt like there was a hole where you just went, oh, this is just kind of a gimme hole or a gimme approach shot. And in matter of fact, there's a big lake in the middle of the flat area. There's kind of the first part going out, trying to explain it in a way that people can visualize it. When you first go and you go down to the first tee, there's the boundary holes that go all around the course, and then there's the interior holes. And the interior flat holes are pretty much laid out in front of you. You can see four or five, six of them. And you can see different greens. There's a big lake that comes into play on a few of the holes. So those shots, either on a par three that's there or an approach shot, are really challenging because you're carrying water. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to play shots. And if the pins are behind a bunker, there aren't a lot of bunkers, but they're really strategically placed and they're great bunkers. You have to play shots that mean something. You know, you can play away from them if you want and you're a beginner and you don't want to get involved, or you can challenge a pin and really try to make a score.
Nice.
So they've managed to accomplish all that with the way they've set it up. As I said, you hit every shot you can. And if you go further back, you know, I played it from my usual. I didn't go out and try to say, wow, I'm going to play this from the tips. One day it might be fun, but I wanted to get my real feel for it. So I think I probably played it from, number three, which was about probably, I'm going to say about 5,400 yards. I went between the 3 and 4 tees.
Is so one, I'm gonna say one the about, hardest or is 8 the hardest?
No, 1 is the easiest. Okay. 8 is the hardest. Then you walk up and goes all the way up to number 1.
What? One other thing I saw in your notes here that I found interesting about this, and when it goes back to beginner players and making sure that this is playable for people of all levels, is there's no rough on the golf course, right? It's basically a one cut height, fairway height everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is the super Kyle McDonald, his team, unbelievable job. And what they did, and again, this is an accommodation to the fact that all different levels will be playing it. You don't want to make it too hard. You don't want 3-inch rough where beginning golfers are going to have a really hard time.
Yep.
So that challenge was handled, and the conditioning is great. Tiff Eagle Greens, they were fantastic. I mean, really fantastic. The bunkering is great. Beautiful bunker design, and then they've got kind of longer grass at the facing, on the front facing of the greens, of the bunkers, which if your ball lands in it, it'll stop, but you can see it, you can hit out of it. It's not, it doesn't get buried or anything, and visually it's a beautiful touch. And everything, the teeing areas, the fairways, and the approaches, the green surrounds, are all mowed to fairway height.
Right.
So you really get a cool, different feel and look to the golf course. And as I said, the beginners, they can play it, and really good players can play it too. The grass itself was fascinating to me. I said Tiff Eagle on the greens. They have something called Tiff Tough grass on everything else, which was great. And one of the things that in kind of researching it, uses 40% less water, which is, they are so environmentally conscious about what they're doing at this golf course, blew me away. The foundation itself. This isn't just let's play golf and make money. This is, they are spending millions of dollars on environmental impact for the whole facility, not just the golf course, the whole entire area, which, you know, abuts the neighborhoods around it. They're really taking care of it and figuring out ways to make everything better for everybody. So that part of it is great. I think all the way around, I loved the golf course. You know me, Darren, I'm kind of a big picture golf course guy. I don't remember every hole like you and Eric Hart do.
I don't remember hole like Eric Hart and Brian Orr do.
Yeah, they do, but you do too. You're able to pull out number 7 on pick a course. But I'm much more of a big picture and feel guy. And the thing, it's now a couple of weeks since I've been to Bobby Jones Golf Course, and I still have the feel for the holes, for specific shots, you know, the flat holes being different, the boundary holes being really cool, a lot of trees around the outside of the golf course, blind tee shots, elevation change, some blind tee shots on that side of the course that dip down into greens. So you have to trust yardages, and then you get down there and find out there's bridges, there's views. That part of the golf course to me, the visual part of the golf course, was as big an experience part of it as anything else too. I just love the way they've laid this whole thing out. And as I said, the team, Kyle McDonald, his team, everybody together has given people a place to play. And I can't, you know this, I'm going to just mention this, I almost forgot. When you're playing the outer holes, especially on the flat part, this neighborhood that's all around the golf course, there's a walking path, I'm going to say 20 yards from the edge of the golf course.
Nice.
And so all you're seeing is, it's just people walking. Dogs, baby strollers, people jogging, people running the whole way around you as you're playing. And they're watching you, you're watching them. The interaction in the community is off the charts. Off the charts cool. There were no dogs on the golf course. Maybe they'll get to that. But just seeing the puppies out there with their owners kind of walking around and doing stuff. So as far as the golf course, the rates vary with the seasons. It goes from about $15 to about $35 per 9 holes.
That's great.
Yeah. And, you know, I got a little bit of blowback. I put some stuff up on social media about, say, paying $70 or $75, whatever it comes to, for 18 holes. To me, I thought, okay, it's like every other place. It's what the market bears.
Sure.
It's what the market allows. It has nothing to do with worth it or not worth it. This, to me, I looked at other golf courses that I paid $75 to play 18, and it doesn't come close to this.
Yeah.
So I thought it's a really reasonable rate for people to get out there. The other part of it is the, and I'm going to get into that now, but the other part of it is so designed to grow the game, to make it available and enjoyable for kids, from young kids all the way up to, you know, every adult. And I saw so many kids carrying their bags and walking on the golf course. Forget the practice area, the range, the golf academy, any of the other places. But on the golf course, just a lot of teenagers and young teens carrying their bags and walking and playing the game. And I think that, as much as anything, talks to what Bobby Jones Golf Course is about. So if you decide to take one of the golf carts, which are fun, if that's what you want, or the tempo walk, and a quick note on the tempo walk, you know, I have my shoulders aren't the greatest, so I could carry six or seven clubs, not have too much of a problem. But I decided to take this tempo walk by club car. And you put your golf bag, it's like a little robot behind you, and you put your bag on it. They have a couple of drink holders and a cooler that you can put a couple of drinks and some food in. And you attach a little receiver sender on your belt, and you turn it on and off as you walk. And this thing follows you maybe 5 yards behind you the whole way around the golf course. And you're completely free. And I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I have to tell you, at the end of the round, when I had to turn this thing in after nine holes, I was sad. I felt like I had a little buddy behind
you
me the whole way.
You made a friend.
I did. I was walking, and I get to a green, and I turn it off. I turn around and grab my putter and go, okay, I'll be right back. Okay, I'm crazy. But it was really, I have to say, it was a really cool way to experience the game. If you have trouble pushing or pulling a cart or whatever. So anyway, they're extra. The tempo walk and the golf carts are extra, but I think really fun.
All right. That sounds awesome. I mean, that part of this, that might be my favorite thing you've said. You know, one thing going back to the price too, and I encounter this a lot now, you know, being on the operations side of golf a little bit more. There are always going to be those people who think that they should play in the optimal times, in the best weather, for the least amount of money. And I find myself just telling people that that's just not where golf is at, especially now in the pandemic with this explosion of golf. You know, that most golf courses, though, have other ways for you to play golf a little bit more affordable. You just aren't going to be able to play at, you know, 10 a.m. on Saturday morning to do that. And so if you're a person who's price conscious, look around and find the courses you want to play and find the way to play them for a little bit less money if that is what matters to you. But everybody, every golf course, especially right now, has to get as much money as they can possibly get while things are good, because that's the way we continue to sustain golf and have these kinds of golf courses for years and decades to come.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things, too, is to kind of find a balance between courses that are charging a lot of money to keep a course beautifully maintained and a golf course that charges a little bit less and somehow, like Bobby Jones, is still able to have good, great conditioning in this case. And the other things that I'm going to mention now, you know, as we go along, allow you, if you want to go play nine holes and find a time at Bobby Jones for $20 to play those nine and spend a couple hours on a really cool golf course doing that. And then go to the Dan Yates putting green, which is its own little course, and spend half an hour there. You can do that. That's $10 to go out and spend time on the putting course, which is great. Unless you're 18 or younger, where it's free,
right,
which is fairly cool. You can hit balls on the range. In other words, you can spend 3 hours at a place for $30.
Yeah.
And I dare you to go out and find that kind of entertainment. Go to a movie for an hour and 40 minutes and buy some popcorn and soda and try to spend $30 and see how far you get.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, anyway, it's well worth it. That's the bottom line. I'm going to mention somebody who I think is another important cog in this piece of the Bobby Jones Golf course puzzle, and that's Brian Conley, who's the director of golf. I met him for an hour the morning I came back to play the reverse nine, and was so grateful to be able to do that, and to Angela for setting it up. Brian Conley is one of those guys you meet in the game, and you and I have been privileged, Aaron, to meet people like this, who I was blown away by. He's a University of Georgia grad. He came over to Bobby Jones after 9 years at a really great golf resort location, Lake Lanier Resort, about 30 miles outside of Atlanta, a big facility, beautiful golf course, but 1,200 acres and a big complex of amenities. They have all kinds of things to do. And when I asked him about it, I said, how did you get involved? Did they come to you? He said, yes. I said, well, you're coming from Lake Lanier. This has to be kind of a different deal. And he said, at the beginning, he had heard about it. He wasn't really sure. You know, he didn't have an idea of what they were really trying to accomplish. And it wasn't until he met with them and got to meet all the people involved and heard what they were trying to do, what the theme was, and the way they were approaching the future of the game and kids and adaptive learning and the golf academy and all that, he said, literally, this isn't a normal opportunity. If I hadn't done this, I probably would have regretted it the rest of my life. Huh? And he's not only smart, but he is fun. The way he looks at the relationship with the team that he's built there on every level and all the facets, he's just one of those guys that gets it. And that's a big part of why this is such an impressive place, too. He told me that everything was genuine and from the heart about Bobby Jones Golf Course. And so everything that he's done, the pro shop, what is called the Ed Hoard pro shop, but it's not a pro shop per se. So you walk in at this point, because it's just being built out and will be fully operational in all its aspects around the course within the next couple of months. You check in, you go in now and you check in. It's the highest tech golf shop I've seen. You walk in, and they have it set up. And again, this is something that Brian was involved in. They got the Savannah School of Design to have a competition, to have them try to come up with a cool interior area. And they knew they didn't want it to be a normal pro shop. In that, they didn't want you to walk in and have to spend a whole lot of time with a ton of merchandise around and all kinds of other things. So it's basically these tech tables like you would find, say, at an Apple store. And they have Microsoft Surface tablets set up. You go in. They have some things in there, some apparel, some balls, some head covers, you know, but it's minimal. And it's beautifully designed. You can go in if you want to shop for merchandise, either before or after. You go to these tablets. You can look at all the affiliated apparel that's available. You can order it directly online at these tech tables, and it's drop shipped to your house. So the way they're looking at the whole transition to the game, you know, when you go to a golf course and there's a check-in place with, you usually go into the pro shop, you deal with the pro shop staff, you get a time, you go outside, you find a starter, you do all that separately. The way they're running this at the Ed Hoard shop is that's not going to be a part of it. What you normally would associate just with checking in at the bag drop is going to be the place where you interact at Bobby Jones Golf Course.
Nice.
So you go up. It's a bigger area that was still being built when I was there. But you go up. You check in. You can do it online. You just go up, and that part is really easy. They're going to have food. They're going to have beverages, snacks. You can buy some craft beer there if you want. Those kind of things are all going to be done at this outside area. So you're not spending a whole lot of time inside. At this point, you're going to get there. You're going to get what you need. You're going to get your stuff, and then you're going to go and just walk down and go right out to the golf course or the putting green or do whatever. And so, you know, that was the first thing about Brian that I was talking to and going, oh, boy, okay, this is different. This looks different. They're obviously getting to a point where they're dealing with not only a younger, you know, generation of golfers that are coming in. Again, the kids part of everything I saw is big.
Right.
So they don't want to go in and spend 20 minutes or half an hour inside the pro shop. looking around. They may want a hat and they can get that later, but the way they've done that is really beautiful. And I love this kind of Apple Store template with the tech bars.
And you,
even though I'm a Hickory player and I'm kind of old school, I just love how I love the forward thinking nature of what Brian and his team are doing there.
Right. And you said in your notes, you can buy golf balls out of a vending machine.
Yeah, they're going to have all kinds of things that you can do through that. You know, and it's like Brian said, you're not going to come to a nine-hole golf course and want to buy, you know, a dozen golf balls.
Sure.
If you want to do it quickly, here you go. You buy a soda out of a vending machine. What's the difference? You want three balls? Here you go.
Yep.
And again, it's a mindset. I think it's the way they look and are looking at outside the box stuff that I loved and I think you would really love when you're there. Okay, so let's just get into the. I've talked about the golf course. I've talked about the pro shop. The other big part of this was I said earlier that Bobby Jones Golf Course has become the epicenter of golf in the state of Georgia, and there's a reason. Along with the golf course, what was decided was they were going to move everything important about golf in Georgia to Bobby Jones Golf Course. So the main building that you see when you drive in and that you want to get into because it's unbelievably great is called the Murray Golf House. And everything at Bobby Jones is named after somebody important in Georgia golf. I mentioned the Ed Horde Pro Shop. He was a Georgia Golf Hall of Fame member and a longtime PGA professional that people, from what I read about, seem to love. Murray Golf House, named after Stuart Murray, who was a former, and I love this, he was a former Budweiser distributor who regularly played with Bobby Jones at Eastlake. Think about that for a second. This is who the golf house is named after. So if you're a kid and you walk up and say, "Who's Murray?" Sounds like a guy I used to go to Temple with. "Who's Murray?" But then somebody says, "He's named Stuart Murray and he used to play golf with Bobby Jones."
That's awesome.
I mean, to me, the connection to the history is, I keep going back to it. Anyway, the Murray Golf House is home to a few things. The Georgia State Golf Association, the Georgia section of the PGA, which is huge and important. And it's also home to Boone's Restaurant, which, Darren, you would find probably the most interesting of all these. So it's got all that, and it's still being built out and finished, but it's got a bunch of stuff in it already that is gorgeous. There's the Bob Jones Room also in the Murray Golf House, which, needless to say, focuses on Bobby Jones and his life and his contributions. The Georgia Golf Hall of Fame, which I mentioned and is, I'm going to say, probably 75-80% completed, blew me away. It's not big, but what they have there is really fascinating and fun. It's the first physical site of the Golf Hall of Fame for Georgia. They have the history of golf in Georgia is really well represented, including, and this again is the forward-looking part of this, as opposed to having big walls with a lot of pictures and things like that, there's an interactive touchscreen display that's pretty good size that has every member of the Georgia Golf Hall of Fame listed on it, and it's interactive. So you walk up to it, you touchscreen, you find a name you might be interested in, you hit that, and up comes the history of that person who was inducted into the Georgia Golf Hall of Fame. Just a really cool aspect. There's memorabilia, there's trophies, there's a special room, as I said, dedicated to Bobby Jones. There's a banquet room for up to 60 people. There are screens that come down from the ceiling. It is a gathering place, is the best way to describe it. It's history, it's the PGA section in Georgia, it's the, you know, it's the ability for all the people who are important and love the game in Georgia to gather with a beautiful setting. Really cool. The other part of the Murray Golf House, which is really, really cool, is Boone's Restaurant. And he, like the other people, he was an Augusta businessman. He was a philanthropist. He was an avid golfer. His name was Boone Knox. So Boone is why it's called Boone's Restaurant. And this is another wonderful idea. This is not just a kind of an adjunct to the golf course restaurant that you just walk in. This is a separate mindset that is more like the way Brian described it. They think of it like a Buck's Head Atlanta, you know, restaurant that they just happen to have at the golf course. So the way they approach food is unbelievable. They have an executive chef. His name is Austin Rocchini, and he's put together an amazing menu. It changes all the time. It's seasonal. It's all fresh food, depending on what's in season, is what they do. They change the menu. They change the wine list. They change the cocktail mix. They have craft beers, all kinds of local craft beer that's constantly being moved in, moved out. People try it. People like it. It's a beautiful setting. They have a wraparound veranda that overlooks the golf course. It's up high on a hill, looks down over the Bobby Jones Golf Course. Really fantastic place. And not, as I said, it's not just a place where the golfers go. This is a place where the community comes and eats dinner and lunch and gets to hang outside and then interact with golfers who may be coming, you know, in from playing or whatever.
I'm certainly a person who would build food into my visit, whether it's lunch or dinner or whatever. And the fact that, you know, too many places that we go on our mini travels don't have the menu variety that you want, where when you go back, you know, a couple months later, a couple weeks later, whatever, you're just getting the same things over and over again. I love the idea of these restaurants that really can do changing menus and do them well.
Yeah. And I said to Brian, are you involved in the menu at all? He went, no. He said, I leave that to the people who actually know what they're doing. He said, they don't come and deal with me about the golf course. I don't come in and deal with them about the restaurant. And everybody's happy. He said, I only want people at this facility who love what they do, are good at what they do. And I give them the chance to take credit for making everything that they're doing a success. And he's done that with the restaurant, too. I mean, I had an unbelievably great lunch there. And it was not just a golf course lunch. It was really like you're in a wonderful restaurant. It's not, you know, overly high priced or anything. You really felt like you were getting something special while you were there. So we'll go back. You'd love it. I might have trouble getting you out of there. That's my fear. All right, let's move outside just a little bit and get to the few other elements that are around. I mentioned the Dan Yates putting course, which is right outside the check-in area and the beginning of the walk down to the golf course. We've been at some other putting courses, you and I, and they're great, you know, but they tend to be really big because the properties are bigger. So places like Bandon and the Punch Bowl or Gamble Sands, places like that have a lot of land, they're making a big putting green, putting course experience. Dan Yates is a smaller experience. It's 9 holes, and that's reversible too. They change the routing every day, so which I thought was a great connection to the course. It takes about half an hour to play. It was named after the name Yates in Georgia, and especially Augusta and Atlanta, is a very well-known name. Dan Yates was a great Georgia amateur player. He was a member at Augusta National. Listen to this, Darren. Dan Yates attended the first 78 Masters. 78. From the very first one until he died.
Wow.
He's the younger brother of Charlie Yates, who's really pretty famous. He's the 1938 U.S. Amateur winner. He was a member always at Augusta National and the secretary there for years and years. So the name Dan Yates in that part of the world is very famous. So the Dan Yates putting course, it's the first thing you see when you walk in from the putting garage, and it immediately draws you in because it's got humps and mounds and all different kind of looks. I was there late in the afternoon. It was beautiful. Got there at sunrise pretty much the next morning. Whole different light, whole different experience. They've got where the tee areas are for each hole is a little drink stand, so you can go from Boone's Restaurant, come outside, have a craft beer, take advantage of the putting course. It's that kind of feel to it. And again, it's on a smaller scale. And the number of kids, again, I keep going back to the kids, the number of kids that were out playing and having fun and yelling and running around this course when they, you know, make a putt or get close is off the charts. And the kids and their young sons and daughters doing this. This is the part about the putting course, and I'll talk about the cup course in a second. But that to me was fantastic. Again, kids under 18 play free all the time. Cost $10 if you want to go out and just have a half hour or an hour on the Dan Yates course yourself if you're over 18, and well worth it. Tons of fun. Okay, got it there?
Yeah, I got that. I'm even more fascinated about, you mentioned the cup links. Because I love short little golf courses where you actually hit shots. So
this is the I'm going to get to it in a second because I want to talk about the Grand Slam Golf Academy first, which is on the way to the cup links or the wee links, as they like to call them. But let me mention the Grand Slam Golf Academy because this is a huge portion of what Bobby Jones Golf Course has turned out to be about. It wasn't always in the initial thinking, but I spent time again with Brian Conley inside and with Justin Martin. Justin Martin is the head of the junior program at the Grand Slam Golf Academy. There are five instructors that work out of the academy. Justin is one of them and the head of the junior program and as passionate about the game and teaching juniors as anybody I've ever met. The first thing you notice when you go in is that the lounge, there's two floors. The bottom lounge is the Delta Lounge. And you go, okay, well, why are there these great photographs of planes in a golf lounge? And again, I go back to the partnership with the companies in Atlanta. So Delta came in and stepped in and said, here, we're going to support you. You put some pictures up of Delta planes, and they're great. We're going to help you with this. It's called the Bandy Instructional Center inside, which is a big-time family and a supporter of golf in Atlanta. So you go in. Downstairs, they have three hitting bays. Downstairs, they have a lounge. Then they have three hitting bays. And these hitting bays are as full of every kind of high-tech equipment and teaching video info, digital info, as you're going to find anywhere. I dare you to find someplace that has as much as they do. I could never list all the tech tools they have in there. You know, people say, oh, great, they have TrackMan. Wrong. They have TrackMan and 10 times TrackMan. So if you're looking for that, if that's what you want, and think about juniors coming in, starting in the game, at a certain point along the way, they go in and they can start to work with one of five great teachers. And have the ability to do it. As I said, Justin's off the charts. Listen to this stat. In just over 2 years that they've been open, and it's just about 2 years that they've been open, in these programs, in partnership with U.S. Kids Golf and the PGA Junior League, they have impacted over 1,100 kids.
That's a lot of kids.
1,100 kids going through so far, just in the, you know, Junior League and the teaching U.S. Kids Golf programs that they've had. And that number is exploding. You can tell by how many kids are there when you're there. So to me, that was a really big deal. They have lessons that you can take. You can sign up online, anybody. Sign up online, book your time like you do at a doctor. Go in, you can get a lesson, you can get a fitting. They have a fitting bay with equipment that is the same. And the walls are lined with everything we're used to seeing and fitting. It's a great system that they have. People can really, it's kind of one-stop shopping, fittings, lessons, etc. They're up to, they call them experiences, which is either a lesson or a fitting or some active part of the Grand Slam Golf Academy. And they are, with adults, getting over 200 of what they call experiences, 200 a week now. So what's important and interesting to me about this, as opposed to just a stat about a business, they have found that the Grand Slam Academy and the driving range, which is right outside, which was packed when I was there, literally packed, that has been a driving force of what the Bobby Jones Golf Course is about. It has become a major source of revenue for the golf course and what they're doing. The upstairs at the Academy building is the home to the Georgia State golf team, men's and women's. They have their own separate end of the range with their practice facility. So there's interaction with these great college players now and how they impact kids. And the whole experience up there is, as I said, it's a huge part of what the Bobby Jones Golf Course is about on a business level and on a human interaction level. Off the charts.
That is great. That's such a good story. Yeah. I mean, this place is full of great stories, as you said, but that might be one of the best ones.
All right, let's get to one. And I ended my time at Bobby Jones Golf Course with a couple of walks around the cup links, which they call the wee links. From what I understand that Brian told me, Bob Kupp grew up learning the game of golf around his house. So he would hit shots as he grew up around, over his house, around trees, from behind trees. He loved that part of the game. So what he's done, they took this area behind where the golf academy is. There's five holes. Each one is between 50 and 70 yards. And there's bunkers. There's elevation change, downhill, uphill. The first hole is right by the academy, and there's a bunker right in front of the green. So you hit a shot there. Then you take a few steps over, and the second hole, Darren, is a downhill, probably 60-yard hole to a Biarritz green.
Nice.
Yeah, on a wee course. I mean, the green itself is probably, I don't know, maybe 25, 30 yards deep, and it's a Biarritz green. And I stood there on the tee looking and going, no, no. So anyway, you play that, then you go and you play another downhill hole. Then you turn, you come back, and you play a couple holes. The fifth hole, is uphill with a tree where you have to kind of hit under a branch that comes out across the middle of it to a where there's a bunker and then kind of a blind green. So what you've got in five holes of 50 to 70 yards is so much fun for everybody. I mean, you know me. How bad my short game is, if I could spend an hour a day on the wee links at Bobby Jones Golf Course, I would be there.
Yeah.
For real.
Yep.
And again, 18 and under, it's free. $10 for the five holes if you're an adult. Or if you're an adult and you're caddying for a kid who's under 12, you get to play for free.
Huh. Another great twist.
Which is, I keep going. When I went out, I was behind a father and his son, who was probably about five. And they were a hole ahead of me, and I followed them around the five holes. And it just melted my heart, because both of them were carrying their golf bag. This five-year-old had a golf bag, carrying it around. The dad was helping him with shots. No matter how he hit it, dad would go, okay, good. All right, good. Try it again. Do this. Helped him line up his putts, encouragement while he was doing it. And then they walked up the last green with a tree and the sun setting and, you know, the sun behind the tree. And then down and away. And I felt like I was in a movie. I felt like I was literally watching a movie about parents bringing the game to their kids.
That is awesome.
And I just said, okay. So basically, I've given you all, and I know this has taken a while, but if any place ever deserved the time, as far as I'm concerned, it's the Bobby Jones Golf Course. I put up some pictures on Instagram. If you want to get a look at some of the course details, today I'm going to put up some of the other stuff, the amenities that I talked about. I'll put up some pictures of that. So if you're listening and you want some ideas, go to @MitchLawrence on Instagram. You'll be able to see that too. And, as I said, my only hope is that everybody could experience what this place is like.
It sounds fascinating. I can't wait to get out there and tee it up and, you know, spend a day or two and just kind of explore the whole thing.
All right. If you want to find out more info for yourself, Bobby Jones GC, BobbyJonesGC.com for their website, Bobby Jones GC on Twitter, Bobby Jones Golf Course on Instagram. And just go. Just look. You'll be drawn in. Hopefully you can get to it. Darren, really glad we had the chance. Sorry I ran on so much about this place. But
Well, there's a lot there to talk about.
There is. And I said, with Brian Conley, his staff, and everything they're looking forward to in the future, because there's more they're planning on doing, I just find it ultimately amazing. The perfect combination of golf history, Bobby Jones, and the future of the game.
Well, it was wonderful. And as always, we have to thank the listeners. We have to thank them for listening, especially if they stuck with us for this full hour. We couldn't do it without you. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. Hit us on the social medias @GolfTripExperts with your questions, comments, pretty much anything you want to say or talk about when it comes to the world of golf travel.
So many people had a dream to honor Bobby Jones and his legacy. That dream has become a reality in a big way. We hope you have some dreams of your own, no matter how big or how small. Go out there and run them down. So long.